Hey, friends, listen, one of the things that that I sometimes get into disagreements about with people is how much fun we should have in church. I happen to think that Jesus was not a boring individual. I mean, everywhere that Jesus went, people seemed to have fun. I mean, kids were chasing after him. I've never seen a kid chase after a staunch, boring, angry individual. But the kids in the Bible were chasing after Jesus. He was invited to parties, and so I think Jesus liked to have fun. And so this morning, to kick off my message, we're going to have a little fun. And I've talked to three couples ahead of time, and they are going to help me with this illustration. So Pastor Adam, don't go any further, but bring your wife Rachel. Rick and Flo, would you come up? And Malia, would you join Pastor Nick up here at the front? How many of you are old enough that you remember the game, the newlywed game? How many? Just raise your hands. All right. I sometimes will turn to YouTube and watch a few clips of the newlywed game. Ladies, you grab the chairs. Guys, you stand beside your wives. I'll sometimes turn to newlywed game and watch this old TV show. And the idea behind the show is really to see how well the couples know each other. And so we have a fairly newly married couple. We have a couple who's been married for a few years more than the previous. And then one who's been married, we call you medium married time, right? Medium married time. I don't even know what that means. All right. And this is what we're going to do. I'm going to, Pastor Steve, maybe you can help me just for a second. Are you okay doing that? All right. Why don't you just come? I'm going to ask that you would take Pastor Nick and Rick and Adam out into the prayer room. Okay? And what's going to happen in just a few moments? Actually, let's play that first slide because you missed my music. There's supposed to be music, but that's fine. All right. I'm gonna give each of you ladies. I'll give you that and that. Okay, we can turn that music off. I'm gonna give each of these ladies a black marker, and what we're gonna do, I don't want you to read it out loud, but I've prepared the questions on the screen that we're gonna look at in just a moment, and the ladies will write their answer on the card. The idea behind this little game is that we want to see how much their answers match up with their spouses, okay? So ladies, if you'll just turn to the screen and we'll look at the first answer or first question. I want you in big letters so that the audience can read it, write in big letters. Just put one in the corner and then write your answer. Incidentally, while we're waiting for them to write their answers, I asked a number of couples to be involved with this. Most of them rejected me. I think it's because they are concerned that their marriages aren't very strong. So we may need another marriage. No, that's not true. Question number two. Just look up at the screen. How many of you wives think you could do all right with the first two questions? One in the entire auditorium. Okay, two. Flo, you're good?
Yep.
All right, let's go to question number three. I think Malia found something right away. Rachel's got a list. All right, question number four. I am offering free counseling after this is done, all right? Malia said, which one? You good, Flo?
I think so.
Okay. Now, let me just ask you a question. Just a second, we're going to bring the guys back in. But Malia, how close do you think yours and Nick's answers are going to be?
Well, I think they'll be close because we talk about everything.
Say it again.
I think they'll be pretty close. We talk about everything. I tell him what I don't like, and so.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. How about you, Flo?
I don't think they're going to be close at all. Some of these questions are really difficult.
But you guys have been married for like over 15 years, right?
47.
47, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And you'll see when he answers what I mean.
Rachel, how about you?
Oh, they're not going to be close at all, but he's going to be annoyed, and he's going to roll his eyes and be like, what? Like that, so it's not going to be close.
I know exactly what you're talking about. All right, Pastor Steve, let's get the guys in here. I love the confidence that Pastor Adam comes in with. Okay, men, I want you just to stand. Maybe, ladies, you can just pull your chairs up a tiny bit. I want you to stand behind your wives. Actually, that's actually a good idea. Why don't you just slip out a little bit and you guys can stand beside them. There we go. I'm just coming up beside Rachel. Okay, so what we've done is we've put four questions on the screen, and they've answered them on the white sheet, and they're going to reveal the answer. But before they reveal the answer, we're going to get the answers from you. So let's go back to the first question. And Nick, you're gonna give the answer first of all. The question is, what gift has your husband bought you that you did not like?
There's never been a gift that she didn't like. I know her.
No gift.
There's nothing. Like she likes it all.
Malaya, what do we have?
Wow.
I am impressed. All right, Rick.
So I would, this is not a reflection on me, this is a reflection on Flo. Because Flo is very appreciative of everything, little things, big things. So I would have to maybe say the same thing as Pastor Nick. I would say she's always been appreciative of everything, even though I've had some doubts.
Flo, let's see what we've got.
Okay, I put a purse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I knew that would come up.
Okay, I have a lot of purses. It's a specific one that he brought back from overseas, the Middle East, and I didn't like it. And he
That's okay.
Yeah, so anyway, I put purse. Sorry, hon.
Nice. Adam?
Unlike those two, I would say there's many that she probably hasn't liked. I could have gone with the North Carolina Tar Heels clothes that I bought her one time. There it is.
Whoa, Tar Heels t-shirt. Wow.
You know what's the sad part? That's the first thing I ever bought her.
And you're still married. All right. Question number two. What is the top thing on your husband's bucket list?
To be a dad.
To be a dad?
That is my...
Wow.
No, we're not here saying anything, but...
Let's just all extend our hands. Go ahead, Malaya. To be a dad, wow. Fantastic. All right, Rick, it better not be to be a dad.
This is on, yeah, I've been a dad, and it's all it's cracked up to be. And now a grandparent, that's all it's cracked up to be. So I think the next thing on my bucket list would be living in Florida.
Living in Florida.
Yeah.
Moving to Florida, wow, it's good.
I was going to say to have a daughter, but three of those. Probably something ministry-wise, maybe also preaching outside of Canada, like the States, something like that would be my guess.
To preach in the USA, all right. Two out of two.
Very good.
All right, question number three. What clothing item of your husband's do you least like? Don't say nothing.
This is embarrassing.
I know.
Oh, I'm going to say probably my my Spider-Man underwear. I like it. I feel like a superhero, you know? I like it. Just one pair, not two.
I must confess, I don't know how I'm going to transition back to something spiritual after this. Malaya, what'd you say? Spider-Man underwear! Wow!
This is an easy one for me, because we're like really into fashion, you know? I would say that it is a plaid coat jacket that I bought one time, which I thought was pretty styling. But unfortunately, Flo did not think that.
Plaid jacket, all right.
Honestly, there's probably too many. It's not what I'm wearing currently, I know that. I don't know, my CPC staff shirt that was given to me. I'll just go with Because it's wrong. I don't know what it is. That's why. What is it? Whoa, whoa. So I've gained a few pounds. I apologize.
All right. Nick, you are the only couple. You guys are the only couple who've gone 3 for 3. So the last question is this.
Is there a prize?
Oh, I don't have it with me.
There is?
I will get you a prize. I'll get you some Batman underwear. Oh. All right. What habit does your husband have that annoys you the most? Don't look at me.
I don't know if I can say it public. No, I'm just... Okay, in a non... Let me... she's probably going to write something like, I make noises when I sleep, but okay. Not in a weird way. You know what I mean?
Make noises when he sleeps. Okay, yeah. Malaya?
It is weird. He does make noises when he sleeps.
Wow, 4 out of 4. Good job.
Let me just make sure I get this straight. What habit does your husband, that's me, have that annoys you the most? So what annoys her the most? I don't think, now this isn't my ego talking, this is just me now. I don't think I have any habits that bother her. So I would say none.
Wow, none. Incredible, Rick. You want to sit down? Right.
It could be sports. It could be the lack of healthy food that I eat, but I'm gonna go with the one that has ruined her sleep, which is snoring. That's the one I'm gonna go with, just because it's. But apparently, it's wrong. It's wrong. What is it? Watches too many sports. Yeah.
All right.
I was in there.
All right. So I think you guys got three.
You got
three. I'm not even sure you got two. You got two, you guys got three, and Nick and Malaya got 4. Would you give them a big round of applause? Thank you, guys. Do you mind taking that? Now, I didn't do this just so that we would have fun, although it was good. It's interesting how you can be with somebody, and you can know about them, but not necessarily know them. In our social media world, we easily can have lots of friends on Facebook or on Twitter, and we can say that we know them, but to know somebody means that you go to the depth of what we just did, that you know things that nobody else knows. Like, before this morning, nobody knew that Pastor Nick wore Spider-Man underwear. But we all do now. You see, knowing about somebody and knowing somebody are two different things. If you're a fan of Jesus, you know about him. You know facts and information. There are people who would not say that they are Christian or that they are religious, but they really like Jesus. What they found out about him, the information that they've gathered about him, they say they know about him. They just haven't got to the following level where they're able to understand the depth of who he is. And if we are truly to be followers of Christ, we have got to know more than just surface information about who God is. We have got to know him in a deep way. We've got to know the intimate elements of who he is, and he must know the intimate elements of who we are. I want us to turn in our Bibles to Matthew chapter 15 this morning, and we're gonna talk about how well do you know him. There's an interesting story that we find in this passage, and it reads like this. Then some Pharisees and teachers of the law came to Jesus from Jerusalem and asked, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat." Jesus replied, "And why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, 'Honor your father and mother,' and anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God, they are not to honor their father or mother with it. Thus you nullify the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites. Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules." Friends, I want to look at this passage, and there's a number of things that have been taught from this passage. But I really do think that if you look into this passage and study it to some degree, you will see a level of knowledge of God that is portrayed in two groups of people. You'll see the Pharisees and you'll see the disciples, two different groups of people who have a different level of the knowledge of God. And I want to look at what it takes to truly know God from this passage. The first thing I see from this passage is that knowing God requires proximity. The Bible tells us that the Pharisees had come from Jerusalem to find Jesus. They are the ones that are serving in the core of Israel, in the hub, the city. This is the place where the major decisions are made. This is the place where the edicts are issued. This is the place where the Pharisees who served there are the highest religious leaders of Israel. And the Bible says that they come to Jesus and they want his take on something. They want to know his view, his perspective on an issue of living. And they say, hey, we want to know why is it that your disciples don't wash their hands before they eat? You know, don't you know that the elders of the law, the elders who we respect, our forefathers have taught that this is something we should do? What's your take on this, Jesus? It's interesting that a group of individuals will come from a distance to get Jesus' take on something. The disciples, on the other hand, don't seem to be bothered by not washing their hands before they eat. Because there's something unique about these disciples. They are spending time with Jesus 24/7. They have chosen their life not to come from a distance to find out Jesus' opinion on things from time to time, but they have chosen to get super close to Jesus and walk with him at all moments. And the very first time they would have eaten without washing their hands, Jesus didn't even blink. He didn't give any kind of reaction. They did not get anything from his demeanor that would tell them that what they were doing was wrong. Because they were up close and personal. A group of individuals comes a distance to get a take on Jesus. And a group of individuals, the disciples, are close to him. And they know what pleases and doesn't please Jesus. I want to start off by saying this. If you are to truly know God, not just know about him, you've got to get close. You can't just show up from a distance and get his take on things. You've got to learn to find a place with him regularly. You've got to get as close as the disciples did, because only when you get close do you actually see what he wants from your life. Proximity is tied to knowing God. There's an interesting passage in Exodus, and I want us to just look at the screen. It's found in Exodus chapter 19, verses 10 to 13. It says, "And the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day, because on that day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. Put limits for the people around the mountain and tell them, be careful that you do not approach the mountain or touch the foot of it. Whoever touches the mountain is to be put to death." Okay, so here's the deal. God's telling the people, hey, this is going to be the parameters on how close you can get to me, but you are not to come close to me, but in 3 days I'm going to allow you to come close. I'm going to allow you to approach the mountain. I'm going to allow you to get a little bit closer to me. Just wait for the trumpet. You've got this opportunity to get close to me. I'm going to tell you when, but then when the trumpet sounds, you're able to get close. 3 days later, after the preparations have been done, and they now have the opportunity to access God, the trumpet sounds, smoke comes from the mountain, there's a shaking, and Moses descends, and look at what the scriptures tell us. The very next slide, please. Oh, sorry, this was part of the previous one. Let's go to the next slide. "When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, 'Speak to us yourself and we will listen. But do not have God speak to us or we will die.'" God gives the Israelites the opportunity to come close to him. Trumpet sounds. They are given permission to come towards his presence, to draw close for proximity. And then the shaking and the smoke and all the elements happen. And the people go, "Hey, hold on for a second. We don't actually want to get that close. We're afraid of God. We're going to stay at a distance. But you could speak to us, Moses, on behalf of God." It's a brilliant picture of what happens in the church of North America. That there are people who have the opportunity to come close to the Savior. There are people who have the opportunity every day to come into the presence of God. But instead of drawing close, they stay at a distance. And what they say is, "Preacher, you speak to us for God, but we will stay distance." There are people every single Sunday who will come to church who have never come close to God through the week. They've never drawn close. They've never approached proximity. They have simply said, even though God has given them the permission to come close, they've simply said, "Would somebody speak to us on behalf of God?" And we rely upon the preacher, and we rely upon the internet teacher, and we rely upon the author, the Christian author, and we look for everybody else to bring us to the things about God, to teach us things about God. And God's saying, "Don't you know that I'm calling you into my presence? Don't you know I'm allowing you to come into my presence? You don't need to look for somebody else. You don't need to wait for the preacher to show you the way for God. You can get there yourself. He's calling you to his presence." We see this so significantly in John chapter 1, verse 14. I love Eugene Peterson's paraphrase on this. And just look up the screen as we read this passage from John chapter 1, verse 14. "The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son. Generous inside and out, true from start to finish." The Word moved into the neighborhood. God himself in human flesh moved into the neighborhood. He came to the earth to say to this world, "Hey, I've come not so that some other person would be your representative. You don't need a prophet or a priest to be the person who speaks to you on my behalf. I've moved in so that you can come close to me and I can come close to you." This was God's invitation to say, "Don't just know about me. I want you to know me intimately. I'm here in flesh and blood. I'm not here on paper. I'm not here in black and white. I'm here in flesh and blood, and I'm calling you into relationship to draw close to me, to get close to me, and know me in a personal way." You see, knowing God is about proximity, involves proximity. I don't know if you remember when you were younger and you had a crush on somebody. Anybody remember that? When you had a crush on somebody when you were a kid, you used an intermediate person. I saw a girl in grade 2, blonde hair, definitely going to be my future wife. And so I had to come up with a plan, and so I went to one of my buddies and I said, "Hey, would you go and talk to her friend and ask her friend to ask her if she likes me?" And so David would go over and he would talk to Sally, who would talk to Nancy, and he'd say to Sally, "Hey, does Nancy like Jeff? Let me find out." And she would run off and she would talk to Nancy, and then Nancy would say something back to Sally, and Sally would say, "Yes, she likes Jeff." And he would come back to me and he'd say, "Guess what, she likes you." My heart would start to race. This is it. How much does she like me? And then he'd go off and another conversation, come back with another answer. And then if I was serious, friends, I would ask the question. Would you ask Sally to ask Nancy if she would go with me? Go with you meant that she was committed to you. You guys were a couple. So here we were in grade 2, and I'd say, Hey, David, could you go ask Sally if Nancy will go with me?" So David would go over and ask Sally, and Sally would ask Nancy. And then Nancy would say yes to Sally, which was a good day. And then Sally would come back, tell David. And now we were going together. Nancy and I hadn't even talked. But we did everything through friends. And then what happened is we took the relationship to the next level. And during reading time in school, teacher would ask us to sit on the floor, and I remember I would sit down beside Nancy, because that would only make sense, because she was now going with me. We wouldn't talk. Our hands would never touch. There would be no level of intimacy, but we were beside each other. And we would do that all the time, and we would stand in line together at recess, and we would stand together in line as we were coming, as lunch was finished, and we would have these meaningful stand together moments and sit together moments. We barely ever talked, and then after a few days, I think it was her because it definitely wasn't me. I see her talk to Sally, who comes over to David, who David comes over to me, and David says, Nancy wants to break up with you. David, please go ask Sally why Nancy wants to break up with me and do all this, and then back and forth, and now we're broken up, and I have to wait for the next person to be the love of my life. That's how we did it when we were kids. Can you imagine that in my relationship with Ainsley right now? Hey, Nick, could you go ask Ainsley if she wants to go on a date with me? Why don't you ask Sherry Tyson, though, because she's really good friends with Sherry, and just ask Sherry to ask Ainsley if she'll go on a date with me. I mean, I'm living in the house with her. But I asked Nick to go, and he talks to Sherry, and Sherry talks to Ainsley, and Ainsley says to Sherry, tell Jeff I'm available Thursday night. I mean, we share the same bed, but we were using the process we did as kids. And then she comes to tell Nick, and Nick comes and talks to me. We go on that date, and then at the end of the date, I noticed that I must have said something that made her angry. And the next day, Nick calls me and says, hey, I just got a text from Sherry who says that Ainsley's angry with you. Nick, could you find out from Sherry why Ainsley's angry with me? And, you know, this could go on and on. There's a level of maturity, friends, where you stop using the middle person and you just go to the person yourself to develop the relationship. And I'm not trying to be silly, but I'm telling you that some of you need to move beyond where you're at in your relationship with God, relying on this moment for the closeness you have with Jesus Christ, and you need to move into proximity yourself. You need to get to a place of closeness where you know what offends him, where you know what his take on things is, where you know what's in his heart. He's asking you to get rid of the middleman, and you go after him. You see, knowing God involves proximity. Number two, knowing God involves time. Involves time. The Bible says that Jesus comes right back at these guys. He says, hey, listen, I want to talk to you. You're so worried about my disciples dishonoring the forefathers. Why do you dishonor God? They're a little taken back because these are the people who represent God. He says, let me just tell you what I've observed. I've noticed that you know that the Bible tells us, that the Torah tells us that we are to honor our parents. We're to do whatever it takes to show them the respect and the value of who they are. And some of you, speaking to the Pharisees, he says, some of you, you decide that even though your parents are in need of finances, even though your parents are in need financially, that God is more impressed, he is more pleased with you taking that money and going and paying temple tax, giving it to the alms account of the church, to helping out here at the temple, that you think, oh, God would be pleased with that. You think that you understand his intent, but you are willing to ignore his teachings for what you assume is his intent, what you assume is in his heart. He says, you don't even understand him. You think that God's going to break his own principles? The truth is that he is honored, he is worshipped when you take care of your parents. But the Pharisees, they thought they understood him. They're like, Jesus, don't talk to us about this. We understand God. We think he's totally okay with us just taking money that could have been used for our parents and going to pay the temple tax. We think that he's totally fine. He's impressed. We think we understand him. But friends, they weren't just being disobedient. They misunderstood who God was. They misunderstood. You see, when you truly know somebody, you will dig deep to understand. But when you're a fan, you will only skim the surface just to know the surface stuff. You see, there are people that I have in my life, most of my Facebook friends. They are my friends, but I just know the stuff at a surface level. Skim the surface. But I got some people in my life that I know deeply. My buddy Mark Caldwell, pastors out in BC, I know him deeply. I know the things that are in his heart. My friend Clark Moran, who's in Africa right now with this terrible adoption process, I know him deeply. I know him better than most people because I've tried to understand him. When I first started dating Ainsley, I want to please her this one day. And I didn't, I grew up in a single parent home, and so didn't really know the cues of how to please people, but I watched TV. And so I figured that I could gain some cues. And so I knew two things. I knew that if you expressed yourself in poetry, girls loved it. Number two, I knew that girls loved getting flowers. And so I sat down and did, outside of a school project, I did something for the first time. I wrote poetry to Ainsley. I have no idea how good or how bad it was. But I crafted something, put it in a piece of paper, expressed my feelings poetically. William Shakespeare, it was incredible. And then I went to the store and I didn't know anything about flowers. And the flowers that seemed to be the most frugal choice were carnations. And so I bought some carnations, brought them to work that day. And at lunch hour, I rode my bike up to her house, which was about a 10-minute bike ride away. And I stopped by at lunch and said, "Hey, I just came here to give you this little card and these flowers." And you should have seen the look on her face. I thought, man, I've done well. I've done well. You see, because I understood that pleasing somebody of the opposite sex, if you're a male, pleasing a woman was all about poetry and flowers. Skim the surface. I had seen it on TV. But over time, we got to know each other. And one day, I can't remember the circumstances, one day in the middle of a conversation with somebody else, I discovered that Ainsley doesn't like carnations. She likes flowers, but carnations are her least favorite. And I had been buying her carnations for quite some time, thinking she was happy with me. I knew she appreciated the gesture, but I had been living at a surface level, never digging deep to understand. And then I came to a place of realizing that she really liked roses, and she liked this type of flower, but carnations, she did not like carnations. But that only came after time. And friends, that's what I want to point to, is that you will never gain understanding in somebody's life unless you spend time with them. You will never, ever understand the depths of somebody unless you spend time with them. Well, Pastor, I thought you just talked about us getting close. Yeah, I talked about getting close, but sometimes we get close for our 5 minutes each day of devotions, and then we pull away, and we think that we understand God. I'm telling you, there needs to be a level of intimacy that's more than just coming into His presence. It requires time. You cannot know somebody unless you're willing to spend time with them. You cannot understand God's heart. You cannot understand His desires. You cannot understand what's going on in His mind unless you're willing to not just get close, but spend time with them. Spend time with them. You see, knowing God requires spending time. I want you to imagine. Sorry, just give me one second. I want you just to imagine that there are two people in the foyer. And it's after service, and I'm out there shaking hands, and I see these two people, and they're just, these two guys are just kind of whispering. And I see them, and I see them kind of looking up at me, and they look a little sheepish. And so I thought, okay, I don't like conflict, but I know how to deal with it. And so I make my way up to these two gentlemen who are whispering and keep looking over at me. And as soon as I get them there, they get silent. And I say, "Hey, guys, I want to tell you that I will not allow gossip in this church. But Pastor, don't but pastor me. I saw you whispering before I came here. I saw you keep looking over at me before I came here. But Pastor, don't you but pastor me. I said, as soon as I arrived here, you got super quiet. But Pastor, I'm done. No more of this in the church." And I walk away. Now, I think I understand what's going on. But if I took time in the week, I would have discovered that they had been sharing with their spouses how much they've been appreciating my messages on Sunday morning. And how a certain message had caused them to grow. And as they had been in the foyer, they had been talking about what they had been talking with their wives about their appreciation for my sermon series and how they had been growing through the teaching. And the reason why they were whispering was because they had said that they wished they could do something to show me appreciation. And as I got close, they shut it down because they didn't want to ruin the surprise. And here I am confronting them about gossip, and they're trying to bless me. Most likely, I wouldn't get a blessing after that moment. The reason why I didn't understand was because I didn't take time. I assumed some things. And friends, I want to tell you that some of our Christianity gets us into difficult situations because we don't understand what God wants because we never spend the time with Him. We come to a place of proximity, but we rush in with our list, rush out, and we never listen to Him. We never take the time. We never give Him our clock. We simply get the job done and move on. But if we're going to understand, if we're going to get to really know who God is, if we're going to move beyond the fan level where we just know surface things, then friends, you can't just draw close. You got to spend time. I want to tell you this. The amount of time that you spend with God, there's no magic number. But the amount of time that you spend with any individual determines the depth of your intimacy. And if there's a lack of intimacy with God, He probably needs a little bit more of your time. You see, if you don't spend time with Him, all you're doing is just knowing about Him. You're just doing the fan stuff. But God's calling you not just to come close, but to take your time with Him, to discover who He is, to understand what's in His heart, to know the depths of His being, to allow Him to speak into your life. But friends, the truth is we're so busy that God doesn't get our time. If we're to truly know Him, though, we've got to spend time. So we've got to pursue proximity. Knowing God involves time. And lastly, knowing God requires your heart. Jesus turns to the Pharisees and He uses the words from Isaiah. And He says, listen, your words, your worship is very honoring. You speak very high things of me. You speak very nice words of God and you declare the praises of God. He says, but your hearts are far from me. Your hearts. He says, you come into worship and you sing the songs and you speak well of God, but your hearts aren't there. And the heart element was that part of your desire, the passion. It's the thing that causes you to want more of Him. I want to tell you that knowing God requires your passion. It requires your desire. It requires a hunger inside of you for more of Him. Because friends, if you truly know God, you will be hungry for more of Him. You will desire more of Him if you truly know Him. You see, a couple years ago, my friend Mike Daniels, he took me out, told me he wanted to meet at a restaurant. He says, do you like sushi? And I do. I had never had it beyond a Chinese buffet. But I like it. And so I said, yeah, sure. So we went to Sushi Con. How many have been to Sushi Con? Yes, it's from heaven. And so I went there for the first time, and we began to look at the various things on the menu. And I ordered this thing that changed my life. Yummy, yummy rolls. All right, and I think there's like a crab meat in there and a cream cheese and their tempura, and they are hard to think about in a week of fasting, but they are absolutely incredible. And I tried them. And I bit into the first one, and I had to close my eyes because the taste was so good. I needed another one. And then another. Finished my plate. And then you get this thing at Sushi Con where you're able to put in a new order because it's all you can eat. So I was like, we're putting yummy yummies on that. And Mike's like, you don't want to choose something else? Yeah, let's choose a few other things, but I got to have yummy yummies on it. Did it again, same reaction. Went home, told my wife about it. A couple days later, I took her out for lunch. And when it said we're going to go to Sushi Con, took her there and we experienced it together and she fell in love with it. And friends, I have found myself since that time, from time to time, craving yummy yummies. I found myself just sitting at home going, Sushi Con. The experience was so good. I desire yummy yummies. I know that's a weird thing to say from the preacher, but I do. I desire that. The experience was so good. When you really know God, you taste Him. And the experience is so good that you can't help craving Him more. You see, friends, listen. When you really know God, you have come to a place of experiencing Him that you desire more in your life. More in your life. It has to require your heart. But I'm telling you that I'm probably like you at times. I come in here and sing the songs, but my heart is somewhere else. It's just words. There's no passion. There's no drive. Because, friends, in our lives, from time to time, we find ourselves not desiring God, simply going through the motions and saying the words. A couple, man and woman, had met each other at a business gathering. There seemed to be a twinkle in both their eyes, and so he asked if he could have her number. And she smiled and said, sure. And so she used her phone to share her contact with this man. He was so excited. He got home and he started to text her and want to know more about her. Said he wanted to get to know her. And the first text back was, yeah, I want to get to know you more too. And then he kept on texting and there was no response. Not just for the day, but for days. He started to get worried. Finally, one night, he received a text back from the lady. And the lady said, hey, I'm sorry, I've just been super busy. I just want you to know I want to get to know you more, too. I really, really enjoyed meeting you the other day. And then she texted him and she said this. She said, hey, let me ask you a question. What are you doing Friday, and can you give me your address? Well, he lit up. He said, I'm free on Friday, and here's my address. And she says, oh, good. Will you be home around 4 o'clock? And he says, yes, I will. And so he got so excited. That day, he showered and shaved and put on his best clothes and cologne. He was so excited, and he was ready hours before 4 o'clock. And so 4 o'clock came, nothing. Then a couple minutes later, there was a ring at the doorbell. And he went to the door. He was so excited. He opened, and there was the Purolator man, not what he was expecting. But there was a parcel for him, and so he took the parcel, went back inside, opened the parcel, and it was from this girl, and it was a little notebook, and she wrote at the top, here are some things that you need to know about me so that we can get to know each other better. And they weren't like secretive things, they weren't like bad things, she just started talking about the things that you would normally have in a regular conversation. And he was so perplexed. This doesn't make sense. Days, he texted her back, and he said, are you sure you want to get to know me? And barely any contact. And she says, yes, yes, I do. So finally he says, hey, why don't we go out for ice cream next Friday? And so she agreed. They met at the ice cream parlor, grabbed an ice cream cone, and then they decided that they would walk along the boardwalk. He was so intrigued, though, because as he started to walk, she was about 10 paces to the side of him. And so he is like, he's trying to talk to her, hey, so like, tell me a little bit about yourself. And he's having to raise his voice. I mean, this is not intimate. And they're walking, and so he's trying to get a little bit closer, but the more closer he gets, she walks even further. He is getting frustrated. They finish their conversation, and now they're done their ice cream cone. He says, hey, what if we grab a coffee? He figures, let's stop walking and just sit down. And so she says, sure, I can only do a quick coffee because I've got an appointment tomorrow, and I don't want to be up all night. They go to the coffee shop. He orders the coffees. He goes to sit down. She sits down at the table beside his table across. And he is floored. And he says, look, I just need to be honest. Maybe I'm reading the signals wrong, but you're not texting me very often. I'm getting to know you through a journal. We're walking along the beach and you're like 10 feet away. Now we're sitting in the coffee shop and you're over there. Do you not want to get to know me? And she said, oh, I really do. Then why are you acting like this? Well, I just don't want my boyfriend to see us. And the point is this. Whatever has your affection is what's keeping you from God. You see, if you are not able to engage God with your whole heart, if you don't have a desire inside of you right now, if your focus is everywhere else in the middle of worship, if there's something that permeates your spirit all the time, but God is never there, if your heart's not engaged in knowing Him, friends, then somebody else has your affection. That's just the bottom line. Because when God has your heart, your focus is on Him. When God has your heart, there's a desire inside of you to get closer to Him. When God has your heart, you want to spend time with Him. But if He doesn't have your heart, somebody else or something else has it. Pastor Steve, would you come back? Knowing God is about proximity. You got to get close. Knowing God requires time, friends. Some of us need to figure out our schedules because we just haven't found time for God, and we're wondering why there's no relationship with Him because we just haven't given Him time. But friends, please listen. Knowing God has to include the heart. There's got to be something inside of you that pounds for Him. There's got to be something inside of you that captures your mind when you wake up and captures your mind when you go to sleep. And you'd say, well, Pastor, you're a preacher, so you're supposed to. No, friends, before I'm a preacher, I'm a Christian. And I struggle with this too because there are so many things that get my attention rather than God. But if God has our affection, He has our heart. Don't let Him say Isaiah's words over your life. I have a friend who built a relationship with a famous preacher in the Ukraine named Sunday Adelijah. My friend Derek, he was very enamored by Sunday because whenever he would hear him speak, he spoke as if God were speaking Himself. He was astounded by the miracles that took place and the impact that Sunday's ministry was taking place in the Ukraine. And he just became so enamored. And one day he had the opportunity to sit with Sunday and he said, Sunday, I want to know God like you know God. You ever been there before? You meet a man of God, you meet a woman of God who seems to talk for God, who seems to know what the Spirit's saying, who seems to operate in the things that please God. There's just something about their life and you say, I want to know God like you know God. Not just know about Him, I want to know Him like you do. And Sunday looked at him and said, that's no problem. But if you want to know God like I know God, you've got to do the things that I do. You see, that's the problem, is that we want to know God at this great level. We want to know not just about Him, and we want to know Him, but the problem is we don't want to do what it takes to get to that place of knowing Him. We would rather come on Sunday, let the preacher tell us the word. We would rather come and just experience Him here, but not get into His presence Monday to Saturday. And maybe we get into it for just a few moments just to do the religious duty, but never spend the time. Go right back to the TV or Facebook or social media or whatever we have to do, but not take the time for Him. And our heart goes everywhere else when God's saying, you can know Me. You can know Me. But you've got to do certain things. You got to put your heart into it. Find a place that's close. Take the time. My question this morning is this. How well do you know Him? How well do you know Him? Not how well do you know things about Jesus. Your theology can be intact and you never know Him. Jesus said that there would be people who would in the last days say, or when they get to heaven, say, hey, but I cast out demons. And Jesus says, yeah, but I never knew you. You did all the work, you did all the ministry around the church, but I never knew you. I want to know you. How well do you know Him? And the second question is this. What will you do to move beyond the fan level of knowing about Him to knowing who He is? Would you stand? I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes. Not a fan, but a follower of Jesus. God is calling you, and it's not a spirit of condemnation, but it's an invitation to relationship. He's calling you to a greater depth of intimacy. He's saying, I moved into the neighborhood so that you might know Me. I sent My Spirit so that you might know Me. Would you come? And friends, with your heads bowed and your eyes closed, we're going to do something so unique. Pastor Steve's going to begin to lead us, and Jess is going to lead us in the song. And I'm going to ask that you would simply slip out of your pews. If God is speaking to you, saying, I want you to go to a new level with Me, He's speaking to you about moving to a greater level of knowledge about Him, that you would slip out of your pews and say, God, I want to know You more. If that's God, if God's speaking to you, would you slip out right now just as we begin to sing this song? Come on. Come on. The Spirit of God's been speaking to people this morning. Go ahead, Steve.
You call me out upon the waters, the great unknown, where feet may fail. And there I find You in the mystery, in oceans deep, my faith will stand. I will call upon You. Spirit, lead me where my trust is without borders. Let me walk upon the waters wherever you would call me. Take me deeper than my feet could ever wander. My faith would be made stronger in the presence of my Savior.
Those of you at the altars, I want you just to keep pressing into God right now. But I'm going to give the appeal one more time before I give a salvation call in just 1 second. Heads bowed and eyes closed. I want to say this. I honestly don't know how many come and how many don't. I don't care because I know there are people pressing in your seats. But I do feel that the Spirit's finger is on some lives. And He's asking you to step out as a declaration to Him, and it's your first sign of pursuit. I'm going to tell you what happens on Sunday when you feel the Spirit nudging you and you don't respond. You begin to build a callus in your heart because the Spirit's poking at you and you won't allow Him to pierce through. And then the next time He comes along and He pokes at your heart and you ignore it and you create a tougher callus until it comes to a place where you stop feeling His poke. You stop feeling His nudge. Friends, I'm asking you, if not for me, but if the Spirit's not speaking to you, if the Spirit wants you to stay where you are, but if the Spirit has been speaking to you and you're feeling that nudge, would you step out in response to Him and not harden that place in your heart that He's trying to get to? One more time, if God's calling you to a greater level of relationship and He's nudging you, would you simply step out of your pew and just find a spot here at the altar? As people are coming, Pastor Steve and Jess are going to continue to lead when I finish praying, because I want those at the front just to pray, just to take time. I know you got kids, and Pastor Haley's super gracious, and she'll wait, but just to take a few extra minutes just to pursue in. But I do want to ask this, every head bowed, every eye closed. You're here this morning. You'd say, Pastor, I've never given my life to Jesus, but I heard you talk a little bit before about when we are called His sons and daughters, we can rest completely. I'd like to have that. I'm here to tell you that you can't achieve that in your own doing, in your own efforts, your own goodness, because we all fall short of God's glory. But I'm here today to tell you that Jesus Christ died on the cross for you. And you simply need to say, Jesus, I'm a sinner and I need you in my life. I need you to be in charge. Not just give me a piece of paper that says you've got eternal security in God or you're guaranteed a place in heaven, but something that would say that Jesus is Lord. Jesus is Lord. You're here and say, I want Jesus to be Lord of my life. Just raise your hand. You've never done this before, but the Spirit of God's speaking to you. Is there anybody in this place? Just wave your hand at me really quickly. Thank you over here, buddy. Thanks so much. Yeah, I saw it. Anybody else? Come on, this is your moment. I've had people raise their hands the last few weeks. I believe God's tugging our hearts. Is there anybody else? You just say, thanks, buddy. Thank you, buddy. I'm going to ask the hands that just got raised, if you would just come over here to the corner, just slip out of your pew, and my friend Rick here and maybe his wife and one of our other prayer team members will just meet with you. Just slip out, young man, if you just slip out. Come on, just come over here. Anybody else? It's good. Anybody else? Good. If you didn't raise your hand, but you just want to meet with them, they're just standing over here. Church, I'm going to close, but those of you at the front, maybe you even need to do it in your pew. I encourage you to go after God. I don't want to have a church of people. I don't want to be part of a church of people who are simply fans. But I want to have a church full of people who are followers of Jesus Christ. People who say, I want to know Him. I want to get close to Him. I want to spend time with Him. I want to sacrifice other affections so that I can get to know Him a little bit more. Discovery of who Jesus is, not just surface level. I want Him to have my heart, not just my words. So Jesus, as we conclude this service, I pray that You would continue to speak to the hearts of this place. Draw us to you, God. Let us understand that Christianity is not about religion. It's not about church attendance. It's not about programs. It's about relationship. It's all about relationship. So allow us to know you by closeness. Allow us to know you by time. Allow us to know you by giving our desires and cravings, our affections to you. Let us be a church that knows you more. I pray in this week of prayer that, God, we would draw closer to you and we would see you move in an incredible way. Minister to those who are at the altar right now. Thank you so much for those who just raised their hands to give their lives to you, God. I thank you for what you're doing in this church and even for what you're doing in the pews for those who didn't come forward. But, God, you're at work and they just knew that you would speak to them right where they were. Would you just keep working in this church so that this community and this world would know we are not merely fans of Jesus Christ, but we are truly his followers. Bless this congregation this week, I pray. Use them for your work. In Jesus' name, amen.